You're listening to the Packernet Podcast Network.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Packernet Podcast. I am your host and resident panelist, as always, Ryan Schlipp. Check us out online, packernet.com. Find me on Twitter, pack_thatam. Well, word is officially in. I just heard back from the official statistics board of numbers. They have ran the official data through the database supercomputer, and all the data analysts, scientists, geniuses have released their official report. The Green Bay Packers are officially the best 13-3 frauds ever. So I would just like to congratulate the Green Bay Packers on this great honor. Best frauds in NFL history. It's a big deal. It's really, really a big deal. I would like to thank that dunce cap on PFF for calling them frauds, without which they couldn't have received this honor. They would just be some average run-of-the-mill real good team. But no, this isn't just a real good team. Best ever fraudulent 13-3 team in the history of the NFL. So take a bow, boys. You did it. You flippin' did it, man. Wow. It's a big day. It's a real, real big day. I mean, you almost don't even need a Super Bowl at this point. I mean, this is a big honor. But today I want to just give my first impressions. I want to look at some of the general statistics, just kind of a review of what basically happened. And then maybe if there's time, we'll kind of briefly talk about Chiefs-Texans and the implications therein. But, I don't know what anybody else would have expected. I know it was Thursday I had done another interview with BBC, and I had done it with a Seattle Seahawks host, and he must not have realized the Packers' history with winning close games, because his prediction was the Packers would blow him out. I gave my prediction of 27-24, which, how did that age? And he's like, nah, if it's close, the Seahawks will win. They've been doing that all year. And I just kind of kept quiet after that. I let him have it. You know, okay, sounds good. Thumbs up, buddy. You can't see me, but giving you a big old thumbs up. I'm sure you got it if it's a close game. Packers, you know. And really, if you think about it, the Seattle Seahawks are a team that have been doing that all year. Right? They're struggling. And then Russell Wilson, by sheer power, which, if I may take a moment, that dude is good. That dude is so good. He is 2000. I mean, I won't give exact years. There's some years where the Packers had some defense, but for the majority of Aaron Rodgers' tenure, he was one guy dragging a team. That's Russell Wilson. Yeah, you can. Well, there's Lockett and there's DK and there's Jadavian. There's a couple pieces. The Packers have always had a couple pieces, but for the most part, it is one dude dragging a team, and he is just dragging it everywhere he goes. But that's what they've been doing, and he comes back by just sheer willpower. Takes control of the game, beats up on a defense that is just so exhausted from chasing him around in circles all day long, and comes up with a win. But that didn't happen this time. So we'll talk a little bit more in depth about that after the break. But round of applause to Russell Wilson. The rest of them can go pound sand. Actually, Russ can go do it too. But, I'll at least acknowledge the dude is really good. But anyways, make sure you are in the Packernet Podcast Facebook group. Make sure you like the Packernet Podcast Facebook page. If you would like to support the podcast, please consider giving as little as $1 a month on patreon.com/pack_daddy. There is a link in the description. If you have an aversion to Patreon, I've got some alternatives for you. But again, for those that are mathematically, we'll say, lacking, $1 a month is $12 a year. It also comes out roughly to about a penny an hour. So, I mean, it's better than slave wages, so I can't super complain. I'm just wondering if you could maybe muster up the penny an hour wage. Just think it over. Talk it over with the family. I know you got some planning to do, move some monies around. But if you can muster a buck a month, it would be very greatly appreciated. And also, I'm going to start doing giveaways every single month for my patrons and people that just give in any way. So if you gave otherwise, you are also included in this. And $1 is one entry. As of right now, the giveaway is you go into the Packernet store, pick something you want, and poof, it shows up at your house one of these days. What else? That might be it. Oh, five-star iTunes review would be great. Make sure you are actually listening to the Packernet podcast. Check on your phone right now or whatever it is you're listening to. What is the name of the podcast? If it doesn't say Packernet podcast, do me a favor. Go find the Packernet podcast and subscribe to it. That would help me immensely. Thank you. I love you. I appreciate you. You are my best friend. Not sure if any of those things appeal to you, but just, you know, there you have it. Why don't we take a break, and we'll dive into what was a fantastic game. Final Four, son! One more game! One more game, and we're going to the bowl, baby. Oh my goodness. This is ridiculous. This is not supposed to happen. Let's take a break. But this is not supposed to happen. We shouldn't be here. Why are we... Because they're frauds, that's why. Never mind. Answered my own question. We're good. Whether you're an athlete, a weekend warrior, or somebody who's dealing with constant joint pain, back pain, muscle soreness, or arthritis, finding a natural remedy that instantly works might seem non-existent. Most over-the-counter pain relievers, such as Icy Hot and Bengay, only focus on one basic cooling effect, which temporarily takes your mind off the pain until the pain returns in an hour or so. If you're actually looking to get rid of nagging muscle and joint pain immediately while providing long-lasting recovery, you need to try the natural breakthrough pain relief solution, CryoFreeze CBD, developed by Omax Health. This non-prescription triple-action pain relief roll-on is specifically formulated to block pain receptors, reduce inflammation, and improve muscle and joint flexibility. The best part is this 100% natural CBD-powered remedy works its magic within 10 minutes of application, and relief lasts up to 8 hours, much longer than over-the-counter products. It's super easy to throw in your gym bag and take on the go for emergency pain relief. Simply roll it over where it hurts and ice out the pain with an Arctic Blast. Omax Health is offering my listeners 20% off a full bottle of CryoFreeze Pain Relief Roll-On, plus free shipping. This discount also applies toward any product statewide. Just go to omaxhealth.com today, enter code OVERTIME to take advantage of this incredible savings. That's omaxhealth.com and enter promo code OVERTIME to get 20% off CryoFreeze and site-wide. And once you get your body feeling right, make sure you plan your trip to Arizona for the Cactus League spring training. Whether you're a Brewers fan or one of 15 teams that are going to be there playing out in 75-degree weather in February, this trip is a no-brainer, whether it's you and your friends, you and your significant other, or you and your kids. They got fun activities for everybody. Go watch the players play, get a few autographs before the game, and then go enjoy some local live music, go out to restaurants, museums, etc., etc. If you're looking for a more outdoorsy thing to do, that's perfect because the scenery in Arizona is absolutely stunning. Hiking, biking, jeep tours, hot air balloons, skydiving, jet skiing, whatever. No matter what it is you like to do, Arizona's got it covered. And of course, if the Grand Canyon is on your bucket list, you can go ahead and check that off right away. So plan your spring training getaway at visitarizona.com/springtraining. So revisiting what I was talking about before, this really was the battle of close games. Which is fantastic because as we've been talking about all season long, winning in close games is playoff football. And you get a team that was 10-2 in close games. We're talking 10-2 in one score game. Going up a Green Bay Packers team that was 8-1 in one score games. These two teams combined for 18-3 in one score games. The question is, it wasn't a question of would it be a close game. That was never really a question. Kind of felt like it would be a question after the first quarter or the first half. But, I mean, in reality, let's face it, this was never going to be in question. The question ultimately was, which of these two teams that is very, very good at finding ways to win in close situations would end up coming out on top? And the answer to that question was the Green Bay Packers. And the interesting thing about this is, would you like to know exactly why? There's so much, like, big picture NFL truth in this game. It's fantastic. The difference between these two teams was defense. Everything was going in the Seattle Seahawks' favor. The Packers' defense looked completely gassed. I had even put on Twitter that the defense is done. It's going to be up to Aaron Rodgers now. Unfortunately, after that, Aaron Rodgers, I think the Packers went like 3-and-out, had to give the ball right back to Seattle, and it looked like the Packers were in trouble. It wasn't even a question of whether they would score. It was a question of whether Aaron Rodgers would come back, get another touchdown before the game was over to win. But there was one guy who had one play left in him, and it was Preston Smith coming up with a massive sack. It was the defense. the Packers defense close this thing out, followed by the Packers offense. It's the fact that they have both facets of the game in their favor. Seattle had everything going in their favor. The problem is they just have Russell Wilson. And we could say, yeah, well, what about Lockett? Dude, Russell Wilson probably, on average, threw the ball about 5 seconds after the snap, on average. Yes, Lockett put up a lot of yards, but Lockett had about 5, 6, 7 seconds to find an open spot on the grass because of Russell Wilson scrambling around. The Packers have exactly what is needed to win these types of games. These are exactly the kinds of games the Packers usually don't win. They showed the highlights of the Seattle Seahawks comeback win against the Packers in the playoffs. That was a point at which the offense had nothing else left to give against a dominant Seattle Seahawks defense and a Packers defense that has no ability to make stops and just completely collapsed. And look, both teams are extremely exhausted when the fourth quarter rolls around, especially in a game like this. But to have that many playmakers, it gives you that much more of an opportunity that somebody's going to be there to make a play. Preston Smith, Aaron Rodgers, Devontae Adams, Jimmy Graham, even getting a clutch third down play from Geronimo, which is his one thing. That's the thing that he does. If it's third down, Geronimo goes out. I mean, out onto the field. Look, the Seahawks were battered and bruised coming into this game. There's no question about it. But this is a very, very good team that has a very, very good ability to win in close games. They're officially 10-3 after playing the Green Bay Packers, after just coming off another week where they won in a one-score game. The Seahawks just find a way to win, but they couldn't do it against the Green Bay Packers in Lambeau. So anyways, let's take a look at some of the statistics here. Just kind of a brief little recap about what we saw, because it gets real hard to remember the exact specifics. In a game like that, everything just gets completely blown out of proportion. So first of all, I said Aaron Jones would rush for over 100 yards. He did not. The team as a whole rushed for 109. A lot of that coming by way of Tyler Irvin, which, man, it was real good to see him get involved. What a great time to get, you know, that little wrinkle put in. He had 2 carries for 25 yards. And I got to say, and granted, toward the end of the game, the Seahawks are just trying to stop the Packers from burning the clock and played the run real hard. But they seemed to get much more conservative as the game went on. And I'm talking about play calling. We saw at the beginning of the game all the, you know, the jet sweeps, the end arounds, whatever. That one play to Tyler Irvin was wild. I talked to my son and said, I don't think I've ever seen a play like that. Of course, he's 5, so he has seen it. Oh, yeah, I saw another team do that. But like the almost like a fake pitch to the running back who's running right, and then the receiver who is running the other direction intercepts the pitch and goes the opposite direction. It was just that was a beautiful play. And then toward the end of the game, it seemed like it was just smash mouth up the gut every time. There was one outside play that also got stuffed, so maybe it didn't matter either way. But it definitely felt like they were rolling early with the run, and then toward the end, it was just, I don't know, just smash him up the gut and see what he can get. But Aaron Jones, 21 carries, 62 yards, 2 touchdowns, only a 3-yard average. Again, a lot of that was because the last probably 10 carries went for 0 yards. Lazard also 1 carry for 5 yards, and Jamal Williams 1 carry for 3 yards. And that is a perfect example of me not remembering things properly, because I remember specifically that one carry. I think it was on like the second series, and he ran, and I started freaking out that Aaron Jones must be hurt. Because why is he out there right now? He ran for 3 and then just went right back in the huddle, and it's like, what are we doing? It was his only carry of the game, and I freaked out that he was getting the ball too much. That is just psychotic fandom at its best. Aaron Rodgers, by the way, and man oh man, it's still frustrating that every time he breaks the pocket, he will not complete a pass. I'm convinced that he's never completed a pass this year when breaking the pocket. It is the most frustrating thing in the universe. However, I have never felt more comfortable with Aaron Rodgers this entire year as far as his ability to throw from the pocket. By the time this game was done, if he stood there and threw the ball, I knew it was getting completed, and it was. So it was very simple. If he threw the ball quickly, you knew he had a guy, and you knew it was going to be a beautiful pass. And every single time he was in the pocket, he planted his feet, he threw the ball, it was unbelievable how beautiful the pass was. And you just knew if he broke the pocket, he was getting thrown away, so it was frustrating. But 16 of 27... almost 60% completion, 243 yards. I predicted he'd get 250, so I came up just shy on that one. 9-yard average, which is fantastic. 2 touchdowns, no interceptions, 2 sacks for 8 yards. 84.7 QBR and a passer rating of 113.7. I don't know anything about QBR, what good or bad is, so I don't really care. But 113.7 is unbelievable for a passer rating. He did a phenomenal, phenomenal, phenomenal job. The question was in everybody's mind, all the analysts are saying, what happens if Aaron Rodgers is back? What does that mean for everybody if Aaron Rodgers looks like Aaron Rodgers again? You just saw it. We just saw what happens. And he wasn't the only one, by the way, that really, really, really wanted this, and you could tell. So let's talk about a few of those guys, shall we? Let's look at the receiving. Devontae Adams, again, another ridiculous game. 8 receptions, 160 yards, 20-yard average. 2 touchdowns, 40 yards was his longest. He had 11 targets. Let's talk about the real gem in this game, though. I shouldn't say it that way. Devontae was the man in this game, there's no question. However, Jimmy flipping Graham, man. You want to talk about misremembering things? I'm pretty sure he caught like 9 passes. He converted 9 first downs. According to ESPN, who thinks they know everything, he had 3 receptions for 49 yards. 16.3-yard average, 27 yards was his longest. That feels like an absolute lie. But that's probably because, in my mind, completing a big third down counts for like 2.5 to 3 passes. And, as my half-Mexican lawyer Blaine Patino said, if he can do that and help us win a Super Bowl, $10 million is a bargain. And that's 100,000% correct. If Jimmy Graham's role for the next 2 games is to make sure that we complete and convert every third down from here on out, he doesn't get a single touchdown, he doesn't get a single reception other than third down conversions, I will pay him $10 million every year for the rest of his life that he's able to do that. Those were so clutch. And you can say this about a lot of different things. You could say it about Devontae, you could say it about Rodgers, whatever. But I'm telling you right now, without Jimmy Graham converting those, we don't win this game. By the way, he was targeted 4 times, so he caught 3 of 4, and he wanted it. And it's interesting because we talk about the youth of this team and how young a lot of these guys are. Most of the guys, if they've got some age on them, they're like 26, 27 years old. But I want to read a tweet from Mercedes Lewis, put out at like 11 o'clock last night. It says, quote, January football, the finality of the situation is what makes it unique. If you fail to execute up to the standards that you set out for at the beginning of the week, you don't have a second chance to correct those mistakes. No do-overs, done. You go home. Guys like Mercedes Lewis realize they're done. He knows this might be the last year he ever plays football. I'm not saying the Packers are definitely not bringing him back. I'm not making that claim. But he has to know at his age, being a guy that is relegated to just being a blocker, this is it. And the same goes for Jimmy Graham. He knows his contract is ridiculous. He wants a Super Bowl bad. Aaron Rodgers played the game of probably the best game he's played all year. You know, maybe not, but really, really good game. He's got some years left, but you can't tell me this man doesn't want it bad. He's been around a long time. You know who hasn't, by the way? Jimmy Garoppolo. Just saying. Jimmy Garoppolo has played in exactly 0 playoff games. He's been in playoff games with the Patriots. He didn't play. He played 2 games for the Patriots, went 2-0. He went 5-0 with the San Francisco 49ers, but they still missed the playoffs because they were a garbage team. I think they were a 1-win team before Jimmy came along, so they ended with like 6 wins. Last year, San Francisco was terrible. That's how they got Bosa. So he's exactly 1-0, having beaten the Vikings. I'm just saying, it makes a difference. You got a bunch of overly cocky guys who are really young. I mean, think about it. Where is the talent? Jimmy Garoppolo, 1-0 in the playoffs. Nick Bosa, rookie. And a bunch of other guys that have never been here before. Going up against a team that they just think they're going to stomp out like they're nothing. How do you measure the heart of a guy like Mercedes Lewis or Jimmy Graham? Veterans who have been around the block many, many times. Who realize their career is about to end. And even if they do keep playing, there's a good chance that Green Bay moves on. Meaning they could end up, you know, back in Jacksonville. Or wherever. The urgency of this can't be understated. Maybe some of the young guys like Rashawn, Jair, not to say they don't want it, but they know they're going to have more swings at this thing. So kudos to Jimmy Graham for coming up big in a real big situation. And hopefully Mercedes is given some opportunities to make plays, because I have a feeling he's going to put everything he has on the line for this. Continuing on, Geronimo Allison had 1 catch for 11 yards, and it was a critical third down conversion. Jamal Williams, 1 reception for 9 yards. Marquez had a real big play, 1 reception for 8 yards. Aaron Jones had 1 for 5. Sternberger, 1 for 2, which is about as close as I'm going to get to my other prediction, which is that a rookie is going to have a big play. Otherwise, Rashawn had 2 tackles. So whichever one's bigger, I'm taking half credit for it. So leave me alone. By the way, I think it was Nico. I don't want to go back and look because there were 6 billion posts in the Facebook group. That thing has just grown wildly out of control. The Facebook group is massive and it's super active and I love it. But I'm pretty sure it was Nico. He was comparing, I'm guessing somewhat as a joke, Jay Sternberger and George Kittle. Basically, same height, same weight. Therefore, same guy, right? Ha ha, joke. Let me just say something here. This is George Kittle's third year in the league. He was a fifth-round draft pick. In his first year, this was in 2017, he had 43 receptions for 500 yards and 2 touchdowns. His PFF overall grade was a 65. He was average. His receiving grade, 67, average. In 2018, in his second year, he went to 88 receptions, 1,377 yards, 5 touchdowns, 15.6 yards per reception. This year, 88 receptions, exact same number of receptions, 1,069 yards, 5 touchdowns, and is being regarded as the number one tight end in football. I'm not saying Jace is going to become George Kittle, and maybe it's going to take 2 years instead of 1 year for Jace to kind of turn this around because he didn't get a lot of opportunity. And I also noticed today, I think it was Jace getting screamed at by Aaron Rodgers on where to stand. Rodgers typically doesn't tolerate that kind of stuff, not knowing what you're supposed to do. However, I'm not ready to write off Jace. Remember, again, George Kittle, fifth round pick. It's not like, well, I mean, he's a first round pick, you know. Jay Sternberger was my favorite tight end in the draft. PFF had Jay Sternberger as the number one receiving tight end in all of college football last year. I think he's a little raw. I think he's got some work to do as far as understanding what is required of him. But we've seen him open down the field in his limited opportunities and the ball doesn't get to him. I'm willing to give it some time. I think he has the opportunity and the potential to be a special receiver as a tight end. And as was pointed out by whoever posted it, he's a 6'4", 250-pound tight end that is built to be a receiver. He's a good route runner. He's a great seam buster. This is just what he is. We just got to figure out how to get him going because we have no idea what his potential is. He didn't take a single snap until week 10. Remember, he was injured for a lot of the year. After that, he didn't take a snap until week 13. He didn't get his first target until week 14, and he didn't catch it, and had exactly 0 receptions through the entire regular season. He had his first reception for 2 yards this past week. He's getting worked in a little bit, and there's a lot of potential if we can kind of get him more acclimated to the system. With his ability, although he doesn't exactly have the speed of George Kittle, I think he can be a talented tight end. And listen, I'm not saying he can be George Kittle necessarily. I'm not shooting for top tight end in football. I'm just trying to point out that let's give this guy a little bit of time because he hasn't even had a full year. Again, what, week 13? That he hasn't even had a half a year. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. And to be honest, as little as he's been on the field, there's just as little tape. So we've got guys like Tyler Irvin who just were brought onto the team that we're building special plays around that are working great. Who's to say we can't get Jace going? And I think against the Seahawks would be a great time to do it. I mean, they got guys like Quan Alexander that are great in coverage. But when you got Jimmy and Jace on the field, nobody's thinking Jace is the target here. Especially since we got Devontae over there. We got Lazard over there, which hopefully he's okay. So, I mean, as far as Rodgers' favorite targets, Sternberger has no place on this offense. I mean, from a defensive standpoint, you're looking at this going 87. Oh, yeah, that Sternberger kid. Don't worry about him. Put, you know, this no. I mean, if you have Quan Alexander, I mean, honestly, right now, let's say you've got a linebacker that's, you know, a subpar linebacker but is very good in coverage. Are you putting him on Jimmy or are you putting him on Jace? I'm putting him on Jimmy because Rodgers is very, very invested in trust. I don't care if Jace is a better route runner than Jimmy at this point in his career. I'm putting him on Jimmy because I want to take away Jimmy because that's where Rodgers probably wants to go. But if we build a play around Jace getting open, you know, use Devontae as a decoy to get Jace open, you're telling me we can't bust a 20-yard play down the field with that? I think we need to work that in. I think that needs to be a big part of this week. Give me one play. Save it for just the right occasion where the main primary target is Jace Sternberger, and it's a big play. Give me a little wheel route or something. With Devontae running a slant, drawing all the attention toward the middle of the field, have Jace run out to the flat, drawing a linebacker straight toward the line of scrimmage, and then Jace just books it down the sideline. The safety's already coming middle of the field looking at Devontae. Because nobody cares about Jace Sternberger. Give me one, man. Just give me one. Matter of fact, calling it today, that's my prediction. Jace gets a big play next week. Anyways, defense, very, 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 very big, strong performance. Blake Martinez, 10 tackles, and I'll be honest, Blake actually played really well. It wasn't just Blake tackling people as they came through the line. Blake was attacking. So that was I don't know what got inside of Blake. But something just awoke a beast in him, because he's just shooting gaps, just crushing people. Jair had 9 tackles, also had a pass deflection. And let me just say this. A lot of people during the game were talking trash about Kevin King and Jair Alexander. And listen, Jair had gotten beat a couple times. Kevin King got beat a couple times. And it's always frustrating when that happens. But let me ask you this, though. How many times did you see that clock go? I mean, we're talking the quarterback internal clock. From the second he gets the snap, we start counting, right? How many times did you see that get to 4, 5, 6, 7, 8? And there's just nobody. I'd be willing to bet of the 5, I think there were 5 sacks in this game, of the 5 sacks, I'd be willing to bet all 5 were coverage sacks. There was time after time after time that Russell Wilson had so much time to throw and just couldn't. Just think about those giant scrambles. He ended up scrambling because there's nowhere to throw. So I'm in wait-and-see mode to see what PFF kind of saw during that. And again, the guys got open on occasion. That's true. Tyler Lockett had a huge amount of yards, like 160, 180 yards. But I think a lot of this game was just lockdown coverage. Because I can't remember a time with a quarterback having that much time and can't find somebody open against the Packers' defense. I cannot remember a time. So again, I'm going to wait and see. Jair did get a pass deflection. Amos had a pass deflection. Quarterback hits via ESPN, 4 from Preston, 4 from Zadarius, 1 from Kenny, 1 from Montravia. Those guys were just smoking them all day long. And I'll be honest, that play where Zadarius jumped way before the play and still tackled him, I want you to do that every time. I mean, if you're going to jump and get a penalty, just hit the guy. Sorry, not sorry. Sacks, Kenny Clark with 1, Preston with 2, Zadarius with 2. It ain't easy sacking that guy. But they did it, and again, Preston came up with a really, really big play. Zadarius with the snubbed shirt, which is fantastic. I mean, this is a football team, folks. Big plays from the quarterback, who played fantastic. From our number one wide receiver. From our running back. We got trick plays. We got pass rushers coming from the exterior and interior. We got a linebacker who's tackling in the backfield. We got a tight end coming up big on third downs. This is a football team, folks. And by the way, I don't want to minimize the fact that half of this team has got a real bad flu, and I hope they get healthy. This is no small thing. The fact that this is bad enough that Brian Bulaga couldn't even play, that saps the energy out of this team. And so let's get these boys healthy, get them a little vitamin C, maybe fly them out to California a little bit early. Hopefully they can handle it this time and not go out partying. Get a little bit of that Cali sunlight, although be careful where you walk, because you don't want to get rid of your flu and then step on a syringe. It's kind of counterproductive, but, you know, just spitballing here. But it's getting back to my predictions, I said 2 sacks, there were 5, that's incredible. I said 1 turnover, and Kevin King kind of messed me over on that, and the refs. I got messed over twice. The refs took away my fumble recovery. Kevin King dropped an interception that hit him in the hand. There should have been 2 turnovers in this game. And then again, my final score prediction in this game was Packers 27, Seahawks 24. How did I come up with that? It's very simple. The magic number for the Seahawks is 27, the magic number for the Packers is 24. Y'all think I'm crazy when I talk about these magic numbers. What was this final score again? Oh yeah, 28-23. Anyways, let's take one more break and then we'll come back and talk about some stuff.
We all have smartphones and we all know they're pretty amazing, but they also can be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So US Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for 5. That's right, a company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones. And to see what we find, learn more at uscellular.com/builtforus.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
So I've got a couple messages since that break, which is ironic because my break takes about 2 seconds. I just have to enter what time it is. But anyways, I still got 2 messages in that time. Number one, thank you very much to Gary for jumping in on Patreon. Very, very much appreciate that, sir. Also got a message from my wife. Apparently, my daughter was trying to come downstairs, and she said, no, Dad's doing a podcast. And my 3-year-old apparently said, no, he's not. I don't hear any screaming. I want to say something. I think you guys, I think you guys are exaggerating with this. I don't scream. I don't get angry. I am motivated at times to get my message across. I am passionate. Did you ever think about that? Just because my voice is elevated and I kick over a basket of laundry once in a while, that doesn't mean I'm an angry person. Certainly doesn't mean I yell. I mean, it does, but it's a happy yell. Happy with life and Packers. So let's just relax with the me being angry thing, all right? You guys are exaggerating all the time. I'm the happiest person you ever met. Burn. So anyways, obviously, whoever the guy was from PFF that called them frauds wasn't the only one, but this feels nice. So I wanted to see what they had to say. They did a couple of recap articles on things that happened, but they've got one of their headlines that says, maybe vintage Aaron Rodgers does still exist. Goes on to say, having just suggested that the 2011 or 2014 version of Aaron Rodgers, one of the greatest quarterbacks the game has ever seen, may just not exist anymore during the week on the podcast, and thrown some scorn on people expecting him to show back up for the playoffs, that's exactly what he did. Rodgers put forward one of his best performances for a long time, and while some of the ball locations on some of the passes left something to be desired, they at least got to their intended target and gave them a chance to make a play. Rodgers was particularly effective on third down, converting on 6 of his 9 attempts with multiple big-time throws on those passes. So again, the question for everybody to answer, everybody that still thinks that they're fraudulent, everybody that thinks, and listen, it's fair to a point. Everybody watched the Chiefs hang up 51 points and is going to have a hard time comparing the two teams, which I'll you know, we'll talk about that in just a second. But that is a real question. Okay, that's your assessment of the Packers, largely because Aaron Rodgers is struggling. What is your new assessment if we assume that he can do this for 2 more games? Which, I granted, expecting him to do this forever or for even for 2 more games is not a given. But what if he does do it just for 2 more games? What is your assessment of this team? Can they beat the 49ers? If they do, could they possibly beat the Chiefs or the Titans? And why not? What are they missing? Speaking of what are they missing, here's another part in the same article. Seahawks have no answer for Devontae Adams. Goes on to say, the Packers' passing attack has disappeared at times throughout the season, but at other times the Rodgers to Adams connection has been unstoppable. Sunday evening was the latter, as Rodgers found Adams 8 times for 160 yards and 2 scores, including their fourth quarter slot fade that was as beautiful as it gets from all angles. Adams is one of the slickest route runners in the league, setting up defensive backs and creating separation against man coverage, and he's clearly Rodgers' top target when the game is on the line. The 49ers will spend the week figuring out ways to keep the ball out of Adams' hands, and he is the key to victory, as the rest of Green Bay's playmakers will not be enough against a tough San Francisco defense. So obviously they got to throw shade at the end of that. But again, what is it the Packers don't have? Because there's very little doubt in my mind. Some people might put the Packers ahead of the Titans, especially after this last performance. Because most people are probably looking at this saying, I don't know, if I had to guess, I would guess a lot of people are going to put the Chiefs at the top because they put up 51 points, because that's all anybody cares about is how many points you score. Some people probably put the 49ers at the top, but those are the two top teams. And then getting no respect is going to be the Titans and the Packers, which ironically are two teams that might deserve the most credit. The 49ers definitely do as well. But the teams that are winning are teams that are winning offensively and defensively, with the exception of the Texans. The Chiefs. But what did I say about that game? Strangely enough, the fact that they won 51-34 or whatever it was is exactly the thing that would make me nervous if I'm a Chiefs fan. Teams aren't winning because they're blowing people out, and historically, not that it's never happened. Teams with dominant offenses have won Super Bowls. But teams historically that win through the playoffs are teams that win with offense and defense. The Texans put up, 24 points in like a quarter? I'm sorry, that's not good enough against the 49ers. I don't think that's good enough against the Titans, who are not going to let you put up that many points in a quarter, which, because they came back and got like 24 of their own in the next quarter. What I had said going into this Texans and Chiefs game is that I would be much more impressed if they end up winning like 24-10. Show me that you have a defense. They didn't do that. They showed that they have an offense that once we kind of have you figured out, we can just run up the score. Well, duh. The Baltimore Ravens can do that too. They just got smoked. By the way, the Ravens have a better offense than the Chiefs do. The Saints had a better offense. You know who they lost to? A team with a better defense. This isn't the regular season. I've been saying this all year long. Teams like the Chiefs dominate the regular season. They go nowhere in the playoffs. They were fortunate enough that their first game was against another team that's all offense and no defense. I don't have the Chiefs at the top. If anything, I put the Chiefs at the bottom of this list. The 49ers, you could argue, are at the top because they have a very, very good offense and defense. And home field advantage is going to make it tough. But if they can beat the 49ers at home, there's no reason we should not, granted, these are three really tough teams, but beating the 49ers at home is about the toughest challenge that there is. Going to a neutral field against the Chiefs or the Titans, I don't think either of those scenarios are going to be as difficult as 49ers in San Francisco. And let's be clear about something else here. I want to take you back to the last time that the Green Bay Packers won a Super Bowl. The first week the Packers played in the wild card, they beat the Philadelphia Eagles, and they were about to go on to play the Atlanta Falcons in Atlanta. The Atlanta Falcons at this time, we're talking 2010, 2011, you just did not usually beat them at home. It just is a thing that doesn't happen. The Saints had done it earlier that year, but other than that, they were undefeated. Beat the Cardinals 41-7, they beat the 49ers, put up 39 points on the Bengals, right? Just a dominant offense. And actually a very good defense. If you're looking at their points on offense and defense in that year, fifth in points on offense, fifth in points on defense. They actually had a very good defense that year, which was very underrated. Their first game at home, the Packers go in, there's no chance. There's no chance. The Packers don't stand a chance. They were, quote-unquote, frauds coming into this postseason, if you recall. They almost didn't even make it into the postseason. The Eagles game, it was kind of 50-50 because the Eagles weren't super great, but, you know, it was... That was about as far as they were going to go, because after that, they had to go into Atlanta and beat Atlanta. There was no way. Packers won that game 48-21. That was the most points they put on any team that season, against the number 5 defense in the NFL in Atlanta, a team that does not lose at home. Aaron Rodgers got hot. Aaron Rodgers, who was the captain of a team that had a lot of struggles, they were just 10-6 getting into the playoff. Aaron Rodgers got into the playoffs and would not be stopped. And by the way, Aaron Rodgers in the playoffs is a very good version of Aaron Rodgers. People want to talk about how Aaron Rodgers doesn't have a great record. Dude, Aaron Rodgers doesn't have a good record in the playoffs because the defenses continually fall apart. Aaron Rodgers goes off in the playoffs. His stat line in that game was 31 of 36 for 366 yards and 3 touchdowns. 31 of 36. So I'm not making light of the San Francisco 49ers at all. That is a good football team. They're 13-3 for a reason. They beat the Vikings like they weren't even there, 27-10. But this is also the same 49ers team that lost to the Atlanta Falcons 29-22. This is also the same 49ers team that the very next week almost lost to the Rams 31-34. This is the same team that almost lost to the Seahawks the very next week 21-26. The week before the Falcons, they almost lost 46-48. The week before that, they did lose to the Raven. The last time they dominated a team was the Green Bay Packers. Ever since then, they lost, they won by 2, they lost again, they won by 3, they won by 5. That's how they ended the season. This isn't an unbeatable team, not by any stretch of the imagination. They are 23rd in yards per attempt on the ground. The Packers have every ability to be able to run against this team. You wouldn't think so, right? Great defensive line. That's what they're all about. They're 23rd. They allowed 4.5 yards per attempt. This is a beatable team. And the Packers are about as amped up as I've seen them all year. I've seen them happy. I've seen them excited in the locker room. But I'm talking about on the field. I'm talking about putting everything out there. I'm talking about play after play. Guys fighting through the flu. Guys writhing in pain on the ground. Guys like Preston, who, by the way, couldn't even stand up after a hit that he took, coming back and basically winning this game by getting a sack on Russell Wilson. These guys want it bad, and they've got more than enough talent to get it. And so I hope the 49ers are overconfident. I hope that they feel like they got this in the bag because they beat the Green Bay Packers 37-8. I want them to feel that. I want Jimmy Garoppolo, who has one playoff win, to feel like he's accomplished something in his life because he's accomplished nothing. The 49ers had better expect this is going to be the hardest game that they've played all year because that's exactly what they're about to get. Anyways, you folks have yourselves a fantastic day. We'll take a closer look at the performances of the Green Bay Packers tomorrow. I'll talk to you then. Have a good one. Bye-bye.